The Party of the Millennium. It was dark for Los Angeles. I'm sorry. Let me start over.
Start over.
The Party of the Millennium. It was brisk for Los Angeles. The weather was dark by California standards. The biggest audience we had ever read to in the stadium where the Dodgers play. The ones in California, not the ones in Brooklyn.
Most of the people were there to see Dirk, to worship him, or just to see what he'd do next. Miracles had been recorded. Excesses had been documented. His gospel had been translated and distributed internationally. Many of his adherents were famous. All the Scientologists had switched over to the house that Dirk built.
Tom Cruise had sworn off L. Ron Hubbard, saying that now he was into, quote, real theosophical literature, and not that, quote, sci-fi new age tripe.
New Year's Eve is a great time to be in L.A. as honored guests at the Party of the Millennium, hosted by Steven Spielberg.
The 20th century was just about over. We reflected on what we had done in it, together, over beers, backstage. Guinness from our personal keg and chilled pint glasses. We put aside everything, our differences, Dirk and I, and Frank, to usher in the next 1,000 years.
William was there, too, still in a coma. We listened to recordings of him, the Eclectic Seizure Hour, our first conversation of the unknown, the audio tape of our photo shoot in Chicago, when I was telling him a bunch of lies at the Green Mill, after the owner yelled at us for taking pictures without permission, and the cassette of the time we read his clown Iraq play on the radio. We listened to all of these things, and we splashed spoonfuls of good Liffey Brown on Gillespie's lips. He didn't wake, but it made him remember, I'm nearly sure.
Frank was filling in nicely, and he's always been more stable than any of the original unknown. A good solid Ringo, a reliable drummer for our metaphoric laser light show. So we weren't lacking for talent, and Dirk still had the psychic powers going full strength, which helped nearly as much as it hurt. Just that afternoon, he had read Uma Thurman's mind. She was up there in the front row with Chelsea, just for fun. She was thinking about chocolate and world peace and how it sounds like world peas, and she realized it was not her thought, but a saying she saw on a bumper sticker, on a luxury Humvee, when she was at the shoot of Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, is what Uma thought that last day of the 20th century.
I should have been happy, but it's hard to get into a New Year's extravaganza type of mood and to perform when one of your best friends is lying there in a state which leaves him completely unable to lie anymore. Vegetative. For a fiction writer used to obscuring the truth, finessing realities, and exploring the unknown, this is a fate worse than death, some would say. Or better. The drool gathers and slowly mingles with Guinness, a small pool in the cleft of William's chin.
The stadium crowd had gathered that day to celebrate en masse our collective hallucination, our archaic calendar, our passing of time.
Spielberg went all out with the party. It cost more than Waterworld to throw this hootenanny. The theme was, quote, emerging from the swamp of the 20th century. Those bird dinosaurs from Jurassic Park, the para-whatevers, mechanical beasts, postmodern Minerva's owls buzzed over the crowd. There were all sorts of soldiers, or people dressed that way, from the various sides of the Second World War, which was creepy. Banners were hung, their color was purple, and an entire slave rebellion was reenacted before our eyes on a full-scale ship in an Olympic-sized pool while a giant remote controlled the shark plucked those dino birds from the air for snacks as a giant balloon alien, Macy's Thanksgiving parade size, a friendly one with a Reese's Pieces t-shirt on, circled the Goodyear blimp, showering the crowd with bite-sized candies, while beneath, celebrated American Olympic track and field runners dodged obstacles encountered by Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom. There was only one fatality, Carl Lewis, who was not, at this relatively late point in his career, any longer the fastest man alive, at least judging by the massive spike ball which rolled over him. Given the danger inherent in any spectacle and the size of the crowd, people figured that while the incident was a tragedy, it was not, on its own account, statistically relevant. As three children were born in the crowd that morning, the yin-yang balance at that point still firmly yin. It was like a Woodstock for the upper middle class, and fun for the whole family.
There was a lot of hype and togetherness. The bands were mostly good, though Cher's voice cracked pretty notably during her set with Springsteen, "Hey, I Got You, Babe, I'm on Fire." The surviving members of the Grateful Dead, though they didn't call themselves that, did "These Boots Are Made for Walking" with Nancy Sinatra. Kenny G turned out to do a saxophone version of "Dueling Banjos" with Bjork. She just used her voice. Other elves were present as well, and several albinos, including Johnny Winter, who did a piece with the Marines Marching Band. Paul Simon was inspiring with Jethro Tull, and Lou Reed brought us down, but in a good way. The Go-Go's, the Bangles, Menudo's, the Rolling Stones, and Meatloaf all had reunion shows in a special side tent. Surviving members of the got into an altercation with surviving members of the Replacements, which was all but peaceably resolved by the Pogues. Dirk's followers were all packing heat. The Secret Service men stared them down. A concatenation of Louis Farrakhan's followers, Latin Kings, Hell's Angels, Guardian Angels, the Mossad, and the Peace Corps. A rainbow coalition that was Jerry Brown's idea, all armed to the teeth, handled security. And there was little to no trouble in the mosh pit.
You haven't seen anything until you've seen a group of Peace Corps linguists learning how to garrote an unruly crowd member according to the precise instructions of an Israeli intelligence agent in close proximity to a Hell's Angel square dancing with a Guardian Angel to Gloria Gaynor's "I Will Survive," whilst a black Muslim calls for them to Alabama left.
An air of hope, cooperation, and reconciliation did battle with a miasma of disgust, fear, and loathing. Hope floated, but loathing settled. It was coming to a head? An end? A still point? There was some anxiety.
We went on after Pynchon on the main stage at 11:30 p.m., Millennium Eve, 1999.
Terrible world. That was a half hour that will live in infamy.